Okay, we are at 7:30, so I'm going to go ahead and mute all. As usual, you'll have the ability to unmute yourself. Please feel free to do so if you have a question or comment, and remute yourself afterwards. Later on this evening, as per usual, due to Alan's hard work, the contents of the deck in PDF format, the audio track, and the contents of the chat window will go up on the website. And with that, I'll turn it over to Alan to bring us through tonight's deck.
I can't hear Alan.
Oh, Alan is muted.
That's better. Okay. Yeah, it goes up on the web thanks to my hard work, but actually thanks to a Python script, a really neat Python script that does all the work for me, or most of the work for me. Okay, we've got a few things on the agenda tonight. However, we've got some public service announcements, and this is one of them. We always try to have prepared material to fill out most of the time, but we also try to leave the last 10 minutes or so for your questions and comments and discussion. So hopefully, I think we're going to have some time at the end tonight to do that. So if you have any questions, put them in the chat window, and Chris and I will be monitoring that when we're not presenting stuff. Okay, first up, we have a share, and this is from Chris.
Yeah, so this something that was kind of neat. It was in the Windows Intelligence newsletter that goes out, and the URL for it is at the bottom if you want to sign up for it. It comes out with, I think it's weekly. There are actually a couple of emails that can go out, but the main one is weekly, and just has a bunch of interesting things you can do in Windows. And this time here he had one article on Google Sheets, and the guy, Ben Collins, who does tips on using Google Sheets. So if anybody has a is using Google Sheets for their spreadsheet, I can highly recommend this. You can see a smattering of some of the tips that come out on that, and I think that anybody who is using spreadsheet can always use tips on how to use it more effectively. So if you use Google Sheets, I highly recommend the site. That's it.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Chris. So last week I asked for people to submit information because we were looking for, we basically had nothing prepared, ready to go. And one of the persons that stepped up was Tom Trottier, who has a bunch of things, starting with one of his loony links. So, Tom.
Myself? There I am. Okay. Yeah, this is a Vancouver channel where it's, they have motorcycle weather 11 months of the year. And Fort Nine is a very amusing channel that looks at motorcycles and various things like airbags for them and other stuff, and old motorcycles as well as new ones. And it's kind of quirky, and the presenter is very laconic. And if you're interested, if you have any interest in motorcycles, including electric motorcycles, this is something you may want to look at. Next. And here are some examples. You're leaning the wrong way. Motorcycle airbags, et cetera, et cetera. And they look back in the past, Honda's $225 million mistake, et cetera. So that's one thing I would suggest if you have any interest in motorcycles. My second presentation or site is a YouTube channel called Theo Joe. I don't know where he's located, so I don't know whether it's a loony link or not. But he goes into a variety of surprising details, mostly about Windows, some things on some other aspects, other Android and so on. And he looks at things that are kind of new to me all the time, and I've gotten quite a number of tips from him. Next. So, public folders, Windows 11's new CPU requirements, and that's recent. Hidden emergency restart in Windows, and I'm not sure if he's covered the super administrator anywhere, and so on. Computer tricks, Windows.old folder, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a lot of kind of not basic stuff, but quirky stuff and stuff that goes into a lot of the details about things that can be useful to you, but that are not mainstream.
Did you happen to look at that video, Windows 11 CPU requirements, why you shouldn't care?
I don't know whether I looked at it or not. I don't remember.
I'm just wondering why we shouldn't care.
I'm not sure. I think it's because the basic CPU requirements probably, those are CPUs that don't fit are like prior to 2010.
Yeah, like 50% of the world, right? I have to look at the video.
I read something about the new requirements, and they were for specific instruction sets and things like that. And I didn't understand it, and I didn't understand why it wouldn't have just automatically fell in with, you know, whatever it is, the 8th gen Core i processor and that sort of thing. I couldn't make heads or tails of it.
Yeah, well, newer CPUs have more. They kept adding instructions to the CPUs as they went along, and sometimes Windows caters to them, and sometimes they try to use the new instructions to make things go faster.
I just wondered if like an 8th gen Core i processor, are there some of them that don't have these instruction sets in it that this guy was talking about? I don't know.
I don't know what how far back at Windows 11 requirements would go. I might imagine it's something like 2010, but it might be 2015. So if you have a recent processor, you're probably okay. And if you have an old processor, there's always Linux.
Okay, moving on. We've got another one here.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I gave you another one. The PC Security Channel. This is really interesting because they test antivirus products live in a virtual machine against a huge load of malware. And when I mean a huge load, I mean like I think 1,000 or 2,000 different malwares, and you can see them, and most of the antivirus products work against most of them, but some of them get through, and some products actually stop all of those 2,000 malware possibilities. So if you're interested in security at all, and a particular antivirus product you'd like to see how it's doing, search on that channel. And they also have a variety of other things, like various settings. For example, O&O software has a way of cutting, of setting things in the registry that are more secure. But these are some of the videos they have, but they've been going on for a long while, and they have videos, I think, two or three times a month. There's not a regular schedule that I have noticed. And I recommend it highly.
And they clearly have things for phones as well as PCs.
I think it's mainly PCs and Windows. I'm not sure that I haven't seen.
The top right one there says antivirus on the phone.
Oh, well, there you are. But it's mostly Windows.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, thanks very much for that. And I actually have a YouTube tech slide too. I've talked about this this channel before, Explaining Computers. Christopher Barnett, he's basically an academic from the UK, and he does really good research on his presentations, and he has a very deadpan style of delivery with a typical dry British sense of humor. But he's actually really good. He has really good content. And this is one in particular. This is actually this week's video from him, talking about life expectancy of various kind of storage media. So hard drives, solid state drives, and optical media. And he has research on all of these devices and kind of gives you some idea of the probable lifespan of all of the above. If you have any interest in knowing how long your hard drive is going to last before it crashes, then he will give you some idea. Okay.
Well, one thing regarding that, one of the things he mentions in there is a specific kind of TD CD rather, or maybe a DVD, that is sort of almost guaranteed to last for 1,000 years if they're still around when it ends. But one of the things I got with my Asus DVD player, can I do it? I can't do it. I can't show it. Anyway, well, it's a USB DVD player and writer. And it came with one of these rock discs that you can do. And it apparently it writes very, very slowly, like one or two or four times, something like that, of CD speed. But it, if you really want to keep things for 10, 20, 50 years, I would suspect that getting those mountain discs, which I think are a dollar or two each, and saving it on this device and saving the device so you can play it back might be a good idea if you want something that lasts for many years. I think it's right once, so that might be something that some people would like.
Yeah, the other thing I found interesting was he was talking about data which is stored on hard drives and solid state drives, and the fact that the data may not last on those devices forever. So even if the disk is still good, you may want to rewrite the data to it at intervals. Mm-hmm. So that's something to think about. Okay, next up, I have a question for people. I have a bunch of information about it. Basically, one of my machines has suddenly decided that Windows Update has a problem, and it's giving me this 0x800 error, which says that some of the update files are missing or have problems. And typically, when you have a problem with Windows Update, you can try and fix it using the Update Troubleshooter. So on the Update and Security page in Settings, you go down to Troubleshoot here. If you do this, ask me before running Troubleshooter, it takes you off to a web page. But what you really want to do is go down to this additional Troubleshooters link. And when you do that, you'll find Troubleshooters for internet connections, sound, printers, and this one right here for Windows Update. So if we run the Troubleshooter, it goes off into Never Neverland and whirs and does whatever it's doing in the background, and it comes back with the fix. And in my case, the fix is the troubleshooter can't identify the problem. Now, this is typical, for me, this is typical Microsoft. Windows Update is a Microsoft program, and they manage it. I have nothing to do with it. I can't really play with it very much. It goes wrong, and then they can't fix it. So to me, that's a huge problem. So if you're on the web, you'll find this 10,000, well, there are several ways to try and fix these kind of errors. And there's a bunch of these 0x800 errors. They're all kind of the same thing. Files missing, damaged, corrupted, whatever. The first thing they tell you to do is reboot. The next thing is do an antivirus scan, and possibly do a disk cleanup and create some free space, because that can be an issue with trying to update things. Of course, none of those made any difference to my system. So the next thing to do is do a detailed file check using the system file check utility. And the command for that is there, sfc/scan now. And off it goes, and it doesn't find any problems. And then there's another utility, another Microsoft utility, which is called DASM, the Deployment Image Servicing and Management Tool. And there are a couple of commands you can give. Do this online cleanup image, scan health, and the second one is restore health. And again, in my case, it went off and it would for quite a long time, this one. It spent a lot of time looking and scanning and doing whatever it did, but it didn't tell me what it was doing. But when it finished, it didn't find anything wrong, so that actually didn't help either. And I still have the X800 error when I reboot and try to do the Windows Update problem again. So So another thing you can do is they say reset the Windows Update components. And now what you have to do is give a bunch of commands. So you have to open a command window as an administrator. And then you basically stop various services, these ones right here. You delete a couple of folders, the software distribution folder and the cat root 2 folder. Well, you don't actually delete them. It tells you to rename them to be .old, I guess, in case you want to go back to the originals. But when you run Windows, those things get refreshed or rebuilt, so it really doesn't matter. So you stop all these services, you rename these two files, and then you basically start up the services again, and then you reboot, and then you try to run Windows Update. And, of course, for me, same problem. I still got it won't do the update for me. So another thing they tell you you might be able to do is to install updates individually. So normally when you run a Windows Update, it goes and grabs all the updates that are available and then basically installs all of them at the same time. It will start downloading them, start installing them, and it may be running multiple updates at the same time. And what they're suggesting here is maybe you want to do it one at once. So way to do that is in the, again, in the update and security window in Windows Update, go down here to advanced options. And then you've got this thing right here, receive updates for other Microsoft products when you update Windows. Normally that is checked. So it's doing that. And what they tell you to do is disable that, turn it off and basically try again. And so again, we do that and we still have the same problem. And I'm down, running it one at once doesn't make any difference to me at this point because all of the updates have installed except for this KB5034763, which is a cumulative update for Windows 10. And basically, it downloads it, tries to install it, and then crashes. So installing it singly or multiple doesn't make any difference, again, to my particular problem here. So the next thing, they suggest maybe installing the update manually. And Windows has this thing called a Windows Update Catalog. And if you go to the URL here, you'll get this window. You can search for the KB number, which I've done right here. So I'm searching for the number that I'm having problems with. It's giving me all kinds of different versions. This one is for x64 processors, 64-bit. This one is for 32-bit computers. And my problem is with an old netbook computer. And so I need this 32-bit version. So I hit the download. And a couple of screens later, I'm downloading this Windows 10 file, which is a .cab, which is a kind of a zip type file, but a specific one to Microsoft. So now you have to find out how to run that. Well, Mr. Google knows how to run that. And you basically, you run DISM again. Well, this time you run online and add package. And then you have to tell it where the package actually is. So you need this long command here, DISM online, add package, package path, and then D colon, yada, 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 to get to the cab file. And again, it goes off and it does things, but this time it crashes with an error number. This is a slightly different error number than the one I had before, but it's still the same kind of, same generic problem. A source file is missing or corrupted. And so it's a Windows file that's missing or corrupted. And, everything I'm doing, Windows can't seem to fix it. So the final thing I found online is to run the media creation tool. And basically that is refresh Windows. And when you refresh Windows, it basically blows away all your install. It blows away Windows, but also blows away all your installed applications. So if you ever think about doing this, make sure that you've backed up all your data files. It does say that it will retain, or you can set it so that it will retain personal files. Personally, I wouldn't trust it to do that. I'd always make sure I had a current backup of all of my data files. So I think right now that's my last option, is to basically blow away Windows and start over. I can't restore a disk image because this updating process, I just restored the last disk image and was updating it, and that's when the thing blew up. So going back to the last disk image probably isn't going to help me very much because I'll have the same issue. So this wasn't asked, this was a question, and the question is, does anybody know if there's anything else I can do other than this final step of blowing away Windows and essentially starting over? So if you have any bright ideas, put them in the chat or let me know by email. You can find me on the web.
If you reinstall Windows, you have the choice to reinstall without affecting your data. So if you create a USB and boot from it, it should be able to recreate Windows according up to the level where of the install that you downloaded without affecting either your programs, their installation, or your data.
That's not true. It does affect the programs. It blows the programs away.
I did it for
a friend's machine recently, and that's what happened. I had to install Office, for example.
Well, I installed Windows 11 23H2 from a USB, and I was given the choice to keep my programs and stuff, which is what I expected, and that's what I did.
Okay. Well, this is Windows 10. I don't know how that's different, but I've not had any luck doing that. Bill's saying, can you not just ignore it? Good question. I don't know. I mean, I probably can, but I'm not sure what happens next. I mean, I may do that. I may just do that and see what happens next time I get a Windows update.
That might be the best thing to do, because I've had previous updates that, and it actually went on for about 4 months, where I was getting one update that was causing issues, and I kept on rolling back that one update, and then all of a sudden, 1 month, everything worked fine.
Well, there you go. That's probably the best advice. I like that.
Yeah.
There are some severe Windows vulnerabilities that Windows has corrected, Microsoft has corrected in the last couple of months, so I would try to stay up to date if I could.
Yeah, the problem is if you can. I mean, that's my problem. I can't stay up to date because it won't do that update.
I had something like that. I checked to see if I was up to date. I clicked on that thing that says check for updates, and it said there was something it needed to update, and it claimed to do it, and then it gave me an error message, and I thought I did a screen cap of it, but I can't find it anywhere. But it just disappeared several days later. So now it looks fine. It says check today at 7:35 and everything is okay. So maybe just waiting might in some cases work. I don't know.
I'll let you know. That's the only.
Let us know. Yeah, and if I can find that screen cap, I'll send it along. But I can't find it anywhere.
Okay, perfect. Well, thanks everyone. I'll certainly try that. Okay, moving along. Then we have a share from Bob Harris, and Bob is going to share his own screen and tell us all about browsers. Or ask us which browser we like. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you. I get this right here. And, well, yeah, share first. And, okay, there. And, we should see something there. Okay, great.
Yep.
And over here, Okay, I think we're up now. So there was some talk last week about browsers, and I was thinking, well, I use a Chrome browser, and I got thinking about that, and I looked a little farther, and I wanted to know what's the right browser for both you and your PC, and there are many choices. And so, let's say I use a Chrome browser. I'm barely sure why, but I like the fact that it syncs with Google services. I use a lot of Google stuff, and I thought there was no other option, but maybe there is. And if other folks use other browsers, I figure they might know something that I don't. So I began to wonder a bit about browsers, and I took a look at a few random ones. These are in no real order, and I'm willing to share with what I have so far. Hopefully you'll tell me what you've learned also, what you know. So this is a quick look at Brave and Chrome and DuckDuckGo, Edge, Firefox, Opera, Tor, and Vivaldi. And thank you to Alan and Chris, gave me a hand with this presentation. If anybody wants to try this, it's not as hard as you think, and I'll help anybody that wants to get a few slides done too, but give it a shot. Anyway, we'll keep on rolling here, and we'll get in. The first one we have here, I started, would be Brave, and this first is Brave. It focuses on privacy and speed. It's got a built-in ad blocker, and I actually have Brave on my computer, Brave, for quite some time. I really don't use it a whole lot, nothing against it. I didn't know this before. Apparently, it's got a reward system. I have no idea how this works. And it also has a smaller selection of extensions compared available to Firefox and Chrome. I'm big on extensions. I like to use those. Brave's looking for fast browsing, and it may use a little more RAM than some browsers. I don't think that'd be a problem for me. I do like Chrome extensions anyway. So the Brave browser is an option, and it does security, privacy, and fast browsing. And so the next one is one I already have, is a Chrome browser, what I have now. And I like the way it syncs with my Google apps, my Google Drive, Google Product Search, the contacts, and all that. I'm quite fortunate. I do leave a lot of tabs open, and I have no problem with memory. Chrome doesn't come with Windows, but that isn't a major problem. I had it on. It's my main browser, and I use a lot of extensions. I have the Keepa thing for Amazon for price tracking. I use Bitmoji for graphics, uBlock for YouTube. Recently in Chrome, I turned on the built-in spell checker in Chrome, and that's been a big help for me because I don't type well. They get pretty close. I can correct spelling with the spell checker in Chrome. I don't know why it was off so long, but anyway, some people say that the Chrome has an issue with advertising and ads because Google sells advertising. I kind of expect it's not free, so I don't mind some of the ads. I don't really see them, but it must track me a bit. I'm okay with that. I guess going on to tracking, the next one we have here to look at is DuckDuckGo. Well, the name is quite famous. I've tried it searching on the DuckDuckGo website before, not the actual browser. It's big on privacy, and it has a minimalistic browser, they say. I'm not sure that would suit me. I like a lot of features. It also mentions that the DuckDuckGo does not integrate well with other services, more of a standalone type browser. But I did learn that it might be, apparently DuckDuckGo has a free email service that supposedly removes various types of hidden email trackers from your email. Now, I don't know what trackers I'm getting, but I looked at it also. Apparently, you can combine this DuckDuckGo email protection with your Gmail account. I'm not sure I want to mess my stuff up just yet, but DuckDuckGo is another alternative for a browser, and it might be worth looking for your opinions later on this thing here, please, too. Now, the next one is fairly common. Microsoft Edge is the default browser that comes with Windows, and it's said to have an integration and security, but apparently it may lack some abilities to customize things the way you like. It also apparently uses a minimal amount of RAM, and I've also read that apparently it doesn't integrate well or mix well with YouTube. I use YouTube a lot. I don't know if anybody else would have any comments about integration with Edge and YouTube. That would be interesting. And apparently Edge less RAM. I don't know this for a fact, but maybe it loads with Windows. And apparently it also syncs well with multiple devices. I like that kind of, I have some tablets and my cell phone. I like the seamless things. You get off one, onto the next one, and everything is where you left off. Those things are, I like that part of things. And moving forward, we have Firefox. Seems it's also strong on privacy and is customizable. It's got lots of extensive add-on supports. I've also read that Firefox isolates cookies and deletes unused cookies when tabs are closed. I'm not sure cookies are all bad. I can't have a lot to say on that one, but I think cookies are often helping you with the browsing, so you pick up where you left off. Well, maybe other folks will correct me on that, and please do. It said it could be slower than some browsers, but apparently it also slows down some website trackers. And it's also good for using a low quantity of RAM, a low RAM consumption. And anyway, it's focused that the default settings in Firefox are privacy and security. It'll sync well with the mobile devices on both sides of the fence, your Apple and your Android stuff. That looks to be interesting. I haven't tried the Firefox maybe a long time ago, but never in recent years haven't tried that. Another one is Firefox. And going forward, other than hearing the name before, I really don't know anything about Tor. I guess Tor is what you want to use when you really have to be anonymous. It hides your IP, has enhanced features for privacy. I've also read it apparently has 3 levels of encryption, and I guess that makes things a little slower. That's the trade-off when you're using Tor. And I think I heard it mentioned by Tom and maybe Bob Walker, too. They call it the onion router. I never knew what that meant. But I guess the sites on the dark web are called the onion sites. So I guess that's why they call it the onion router. I've never used this at all. I've also read, it is re-downloaded here, by the way. I get the impression this is a standalone browser. It doesn't integrate well with other items. This is an interesting thing that I noticed in a little bit of research that I did. The frequent use of Tor may attract attention from government agencies. I don't know if that's true or how that would work out. I don't know. If you use Tor, let me know your comments on that and how that works out. And we're moving right through these things. Oh, Opera. Opera, again, focuses on privacy and security. And apparently, it's got an integrated VPN. As I do, VPN, by the way, is a virtual private network. I use mine occasionally for some things, but I pay for one. It's got a built-in one for free. I didn't know that. Opera claims to warn you about suspicious pages that are known for phishing and malware. Once again, minimal strain on your RAM. It uses 900 megabytes with 10 tabs open. Now, I don't do a whole lot on Facebook. I don't really like sometimes some things about Facebook, but everything I do on Facebook, I do in a standalone thing with Opera. I've only done turn it on and use it. I don't know anything about it or adding on to it, whatever. So I don't know how much it tracks me on Facebook, but I'm not yet sold on Facebook, but I do turn it on from time to time. And I didn't know this before on Opera. Well, you can also pay for the built-in VPN is there. You can also go to its own premium version of a VPN called VPN Pro. It'll give you a monthly fee and with your Opera. I don't know if that's worthwhile using or not. And I've got one more that I looked into. These were random things in no real order. I read that about almost two-thirds of all Windows users use Chrome. And I guess they fall in that category right now. But Vivaldi. It seems Vivaldi offers a secure, personalized experience. It's got built-in tools, visual bookmarks, efficient tab management, and it syncs seamlessly across your desktop and mobile devices. I think it was DuckDuckGo that offered a minimalist design. Well, I think Vivaldi appears to be the exact opposite of that. I don't think I'm a minimalist. Vivaldi looks interesting, and I haven't tried it yet. I noted also here in the bottom in the blue here, Vivaldi has built-in, I think it's browsers, to come with your Volvo, your Mercedes, your Ford, Lincoln, Audi, and many more. In my book, that's a credibility accomplishment, I guess. So they would have I don't know. That's something to be proud of anyway. You can make notes in your browser directly, and it'll block pop-ups and other things. Again, it seamlessly syncs with your Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, Apple, all while maintaining privacy and security. It looks interesting, Vivaldi. And it's a powerful, personal, and private. You customize it. I would say Vivaldi, and back here it mentions Android Automotive. What a whole list of attributes. I'm impressed by that. Now, regardless of which browser you want to use, sometimes your computer might have a say in your decision. Depending upon how much RAM you have, you may want to pick a browser that uses less RAM. And you might want to consider how much RAM your computer has. Random access memory. These are cards you put in your computer. You can install them after on some computers. I won't get involved in that. But so some browsers are better than others with limited RAM. Pick that way. I think some PCs were sold with 4 gigabytes of RAM, and that might be okay for very basic items. I have never really followed that train of thought, but 4 gigabytes might be a little light. And I think some folks feel that for optimum performance on a Windows 10 or 11, you want to have 8 gigabytes of RAM. If you're doing photo editing, you might want to have 16 gigabytes of RAM. And video editing, etc., is more demanding. You may want to go. You guys are one slide behind now. Sorry. There you go. 8 gigabytes might be better for most users. 16 for photo editing and video editing. You may want to have 32 gigabytes of RAM. And I won't get too involved in this, but if you don't know how much RAM you have, It's not too hard to find out. You can ask your own computer how you find that. In the Windows 10, type about your PC. I don't need to put that or but my PC. I don't have Windows 10. And you want to find the device specifications, and it should show you quite easily how much RAM your computer has. In Windows 11, in the search box, you can type, again, about your PC, and once again, go to the device specifications and see how much RAM your computer has. Now, if you find you're low on RAM, I guess from our brief summary here, and a brief thing, Microsoft Edge or Opera might be one of your best choices if you're low on RAM. I like Chrome so far. I'm willing to change that. I don't know if I will, what I'll do with that yet, but looking for your feedback here. And then Chris gave me a lead here. I'm a big user of Chrome extensions. They're simple to install. I trust them. As I understand it, they're not really installed on my PC. They're built into my Chrome browser. When I tried them, I can delete them. I can turn them on and off quite readily. And I haven't done this as yet. But thank you to Chris for this part. Anyway, I saw that in the research. Brave, Opera, and Vivaldi all use the Chrome engine. So you can install these Chrome browsers on extensions. Now, I think these will be very close to trying a full browser installation. I don't know if you get all of the features. If you want to try Edge, by the way, it's usually pre-installed with Windows. But if you wanted to try a browser without going through the full installation, if you haven't tried the Chrome extensions, they're easy to install and they're available. I would encourage you to at least try those and try different things with that. Now, this is the part where I want you folks to get involved here, please, now. Please tell me what features were missed on these browsers. Which browsers are better? I need your help with this. And please share your comments. I'm very interested to hear what you guys have to offer. I see some chat things going on, and I haven't read them. I'll let Alan and Chris take over.
Yeah, we can go through the comments and that, and then open it up.
Take the first one, Chris, is interesting. Carol wants to know how you get little mini bob in the bottom right-hand corner of your slides.
I was trying
how to do that in a Q&A one time, but I've forgotten when.
Yes. When you share the screen, you go to, in Zoom, this is the basic Zoom, you go to Advanced and then share the PowerPoint as a background. And what I'm doing now, actually, because I've got more than one monitor, but I'm pretty clumsy. I'm using a ghost monitor, thanks to Tom's tip, I think it was last week or so ago, and a ghost monitor, which is an $11 gizmo from Amazon. So I have a little more monitors to work with now, and I ran two tonight, and it went pretty smooth. But anyway, I wanted to put my picture on the screen and to try if I could do it. It's pretty easy, actually. But so you go to Zoom, share to Advanced, and then use your pick your file as a background.
Yeah, that's great. There are a bunch more comments and questions. Natalie has a question. Has anybody used the sync option in Firefox lately? I can't find the option to sync from PC to PC. I only get an option from desktop to device. My understanding with it, I haven't used syncing in Firefox for quite a while, but basically what you're doing is you're logging into Firefox with a Firefox account, and then any of your settings get synced up to the server, and then if you log in on another device using that same Firefox account, and then you turn on syncing in that other device, you'll end up getting all your bookmarks and whatever other settings will get synchronized between the devices. Correct me if I'm wrong on that on anything. Alan had a comment, used to use Firefox, but then they took away the ability to use certain add-ons, one of which I used to make a new tab point to a local HTML file that provides a menu of frequently used URLs. Kind of a pain when people decide to take away features.
You don't need an add-on to do that. Just add in the file as one of your starting tabs in the settings on startup for startup.
So if that's true, then they've reinvented the wheel, because you couldn't do that at one point. And I switched to Opera, and then I subsequently switched to Vivaldi, which does have that feature built in.
Yeah, one of the comments that Bob talked about, the Opera VPN, I actually use that somewhat regularly for getting around geo-blocking. And it is kind of nice. It is slow. It'll slow down your browsing quite a bit, but it will allow you to pretend that you're coming from the United States or whatever. So if you try to load up something from Comedy Central or something and you normally get blocked, if you fire up Opera, turn on the VPN, which is done right on the toolbar, and then load the page, you should have no problem with it. So it is very useful. It's not a real true VPN in that it's only within the browser that it's redirecting the traffic through the VPN, but it does work. We have a comment, downloaded Norton's free new browser, and although slow to download, is fast and claimed to be strong on ad blocking and security, as it should be being Norton. So that's another browser people can try.
Just before that, Chris, Natalie said you can set Firefox to clear all the cookies when you close the browser. So I guess she likes that feature.
Yeah, I don't think he personally, I'd love to hear any arguments against it, but I don't think that cookies are really all that evil. They add the persistence capability for working on what is essentially a connectionless environment. So that when you revisit a site, it may be customized for your particular needs and so forth. Personally, I don't find cookies to be evil, but I guess if you want to get rid of them, that certainly would be one way of doing it. Carol asks, how many browsers should you have on a computer? I don't know. Personally, I think you need one. Do you need more than one? I don't know. I need more than one because Opera gives me functionality that the other browsers don't. I like having another browser that I use only for Facebook so that I never log into Facebook on any other browser because I don't like that they track everywhere that I go on the web. And so now because I'm specifically logged out of Facebook in all my other browsers, if I do go to Facebook, which I have to periodically for special purposes, it is only tracking me while I'm in that browser, and I shut down that browser afterwards. So you might want another browser for things like that. So, yeah, you need as many browsers as you need functions that are not in your main browser, I guess, is the question or the answer to that one. Again, if other people have other opinions, speak up. Linda had a comment. This was an interesting one. I've noticed this was on her computer. About 50% of the time I try to do Interact money transfers on Scotia Bank website, it fails using Chrome but works in Edge. So yet another reason why you need more than one browser, because if one browser fails, maybe another browser will actually work.
And Allison had exactly the same comment just before that.
Okay.
Yeah, Tom's pointing out that Edge is based on Chrome, so why would Chrome fail and Edge work?
Yeah, I guess they're not identical. It's the Chromium engine, but they build their own custom things on top of the Chromium engine. So I guess they're not identical. So I guess it's in some of that add-on to it. I do find it curious that any company would have something that fails in Chrome but works in Edge when Chrome has, 70% of market share or something like that. You would think
and it's
that
not,
would.
Yeah, it's not like I'm trying an hour later and decide to try Edge. I try immediately. Like as soon as I can't do it in Chrome, I switch to Edge, and every time it's worked.
It might also vary depending on what add-ons you have, if they differ between the two browsers.
Oh, that could be too, eh? Yeah, it's possible, eh? I don't think Linda has a lot of add-ons.
I don't have any add-ons that I know of, unless Chris put them on.
We have a comment here for people that need to use less resources. He says the Lunarscape browser will do that.
Interesting.
That browser was recommended if you're installing, let's say, Tiny 11 on an older computer. This one will be a little less resource intensive for that.
Great.
Yeah.
Elizabeth commented that she seemed to recall having problems with blocking video autoplay on using Firefox. So maybe yet again, another thing that you want in a different browser depending on your use case at any point in time. Todd says LibreWolf is a slim version of Firefox. Slim can be very nice. Bob commented about the Tor browser, and it stands for the Onion Router. And I think the way that that name came about is that the onion having layers, and so it's like layers of where your traffic goes through, and so it adds to your security by that, but it slows you down quite a bit from that. I haven't kept up on the latest there. Did you see anything more, Alan?
Elizabeth says her Chrome browser runs slower than Firefox.
Well, there's a lot of browsers around, and if you, I mean, there's I use Iron and WaterFox and LibreWolf and Chromium once in a while, Opera, Edge, Brave. I find Vivaldi is I've stopped using it just now, just in the last couple of days, because it kept quitting on me. I don't know why it doesn't like my computer, but it kept quitting on me while I wasn't looking off in some other program. So I've stopped using that for most things, for anything that currently.
Yeah,
he says that he notes that the Opera has a feature called Speed Dial, where it basically creates a bunch of thumbnails for favorite websites. And then you can open them basically with a single click. But you can also open all of them at once in separate tabs. He says that's a very practical feature.
Most browsers have you can set up on a new tab what shows up, and sometimes it's just the search engine. But sometimes you can, I think in Opera, you can choose like four rows of different things. Your favorites or commonly used website web pages or something like that, and I think a lot of browsers have that kind of thing for new tabs or on startup.
So there's another comment from a question actually from Glenn. He says, "Does Facebook track you more than Chrome?"
Chrome tracks everything.
Yeah, Facebook, I find, it will definitely do an awful lot of tracking on you, but Google does an awful lot of tracking as well. I don't think you can totally get away from tracking if you want to use the internet. But
so does Microsoft. I mean, how do you think that smart sense works?
Yeah,
it works by either sending the URL or sending a hash of it and checking to see if it's got a bad reputation.
Yeah, exactly. So it's doing something good for you, but yeah, you're giving up privacy information on that. So yeah, double-edged sword. Natalie, I noticed your thing. You said you were logged in. It didn't work. I'm assuming this is with the Firefox. Not only do you have to be logged in, but you have to have syncing turned on. So if you go to the settings in Firefox and in the search box, if you just type in SYNC, it'll bring you to a page and it'll tell you whether syncing is actually turned on, and then it tells you what is being synced. And so you have to have that on every device that you want to be synchronized. You have to both be logged in to Firefox using the same account, as well as have syncing turned on and syncing the same items. So I looked at mine and like I'm syncing my bookmarks, passwords, history, add-ons, open tabs and settings. So basically, I think that's everything that it can actually sync. And I only use Firefox on this one computer, so I don't really know if it's working. But check that to see that syncing is actually turned on in Firefox on both devices.
So Serge, I think, says if you're developing websites, different browsers are useful to take a look at how your site is going to look on different browsers.
Yeah,
interestingly enough, HTML isn't interpreted the same by all browsers.
Yeah.
And Stuart says Brave is deeply involved with cryptocurrency and has its own wallet. It's now accepting Bitcoin, so he thinks it must be pretty mainstream.
I saw one comment from Serge Eric about the speed dial in Opera, and that looks pretty cool. I like to mention I like to read news sites, and I use Chrome. And what I do, I have one folder in my bookmarks, and usually every morning at some point, I go to that folder and right mouse click, and it'll say, I say open all, and it'll say, do you really want to open 28? Eight pages, and I say yes, and then I just chew on through all 28 of those one by one by one, read the news, I'm done.
Yeah, Edge has the ability to do that as well, where you can have saved groups of tabs and open them all at one time.
Open the whole folder.
It's been a long time since I used that.
Is it just me, or I just found that Tor site very scary. I hope nobody uses that and supports it, because I mean, one of the things they're promoting is there's no censorship. Well, those are just scary people. I mean, none of us need to be censored. I mean, that sounds like real nasty people that are using that browser.
Well, there are a lot of illegal uses for the Tor browser, for sure.
Their advertising is no censorship. I mean, it was on Bob's slides. I think we should avoid it.
Not necessarily. It's just, I mean, there are cases where you do not want, you know, like if you're a journalist or something like that, and you're a target of, you know, whatever government agencies or foreign countries and things like that, and you want to be anonymous when you're browsing, the Tor browser is one way to do it for sure. I think most people don't really need that sort of level of anonymity, but if you do need anonymity, that's one way to get it.
Okay.
There's also a Linux a distribution called Tails, which has the Tor browser as standard, and it's oriented towards privacy and security in everything that it has in it. And it doesn't actually store anything on any hard disk or anything. Well, and you can boot it off a USB. So if you really want to be private and or you're doing tons for whatever reason, then you might want to download Tails and try it out.
Natalie, I noticed you said, thanks, I have everything checked as on for syncing. Are you saying that it's still not syncing, even though you have it turned on and everything is checked?
Yeah. So when I log in, you have an option to sync from the main whatever that it's reading to whatever, and then what you're going to sync. So everything's checked on, but what I'm allowed to sync to, it's not seeing my other PC, my laptop.
Well, you never actually see your other device. Basically, what you're doing is when you turn on syncing, you're sending all of this stuff to your account or whatever it is in Firefox. And then if you turn on syncing on another device, it goes and it looks for those settings. You'll never actually see your other device from within it.
Right, but it's not picking it up on this new laptop that I have. It's going to my cell phone, but it's not going to the other, you know, my laptop. So I'm just not sure what's happening, what I'm missing.
In the settings, there's at the syncing where you have it turned on, there is a button for sync now.
Yeah.
Have you tried that on both devices to see if that causes
Oh, okay. I'll
sync
I'll
to occur.
yeah,
Not
maybe
sure.
I'll bring the laptop to the PC and do it at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's probably just some little detail that I'm missing.
Yeah, I don't know. It shouldn't be it shouldn't be tricky to do at all. So
yeah.
It sounds like something is not working right. I would double check that you are using the same account, Firefox account. But outside of that, it should just work. I mean, so I would try adding in a bookmark or, you know, or add a password or something, make a change on one computer. And then if necessary, try the sync now button and see whether on both computers and then see whether it shows up on the other computer if you added a bookmark or a password or something like that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Sounds very odd.
Yep.
Okay, so we've just hit 7:30, which means we've taken way more than 10 minutes to discuss that item. So, Bob, you found a really good topic there. Lots and lots of discussion and viewpoints. So
very good.
I hope you got all your questions answered.
Yeah, kudos to everybody on this. That, I mean, browsers, people get really religious about browsers, I find. And so kudos for people not piping up and saying, oh, that's a garbage browser. Nobody should use that. And it's doing terrible things and stuff like that. So, yeah, kudos to everybody to talk about the advantages of that certain browsers bring to the table and not trashing other browsers. So well done, folks.
And thanks again, Bob.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to skip any other questions because we've just dealt with them all, I think. So let's just move to the wrap-up slides, and I just want to remind you at the next regular club meeting in March the 13th, if you want to know how to build websites but you don't know HTML, then I'm going to have a few suggestions for you at that presentation. But before that, next week is March the 6th, and if you have questions or things that you'd like to share, and Bob Harris will help you share your thoughts, and then send us some details, just brief details, to suggestion box at opcug.ca so we can create an agenda for next week. So thanks everyone for coming, thanks for participating, and thanks to the presenters for the information, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, thanks folks, we will see you next week.